You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters, which is a reference for like five people out there. This is Nick, host of my Epifender Childhood, and this week we watched another listener request, this time from Facebook. We saw Man of the House. This is the Chevy Chase and Jonathan Taylor Thomas movie where honestly way too much is going on, but there's a stepmom and stepdad situation. There is a Mickey Mouse Mafia situation. It's crazy. Anyway, so thanks for calling in to everyone who called in to Public Defender Month, and thanks for following us on Twitter and following the Letterboxd and the Instagram, which we haven't updated. Although we get tagged a lot. Whenever we post these, our network ESO references us, so you can follow that. And of course, the Facebook and the iTunes reviews. We have grown substantially, which is why we were able to do this Public Defender Month. So keep it up, guys. This is awesome. And, you know, thanks. And I guess if you're listening to this and you want to hear me speak or be funny, tonight as this comes out on May 2nd, Cineprop is riffing Boogeyman, which is a 1980s German horror movie directed by a friend of Andy Warhol, so that's weird. And, you know, at this point I haven't seen it yet, so I guess watch it with me, kind of? Anyway, so thanks for listening.
Need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant geekery? Or donkulous? let's not go with shrink. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic.
Red leader, I'm sorry. Stay on topic. I can't see it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable, brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
Welcome to Open Defend Your Childhood. This week we're finishing out Listener Request Month with a request from another guy named Scott, which I know sounds suspicious, but it's really a different guy named Scott, who recommended the 1995 Chevy Chase and Jonathan Taylor Thomas movie. Remember when either of them had careers? Man of the House. I confuse this with six other movies. I'm going to be honest, they're all kind of the same. But I am Nick Hoffman, host of My Open Defender Childhood and comedian on Cineprov. And on panel we have...
I'm Charlie Rose.
And?
I'm Matthew W. Quinn, who thinks we should give each other Indian names. Like, maybe give Nick, podcast chief Big and Loud. And if Daniel were here, maybe Grumpy Cat.
That's a good one. For those of you who have not seen this movie, which actually I don't know how many people have seen this movie. This is a weird one. This is an era where everyone put out movies like this, and we were going down a list. But Men Trying to Be Parents is like the kind of 80s, 90s generic male family film. And this one is a completely indifferent exception. The difference is this one is a Disney movie, so it's going to already be soft. Otherwise, it's just a weird, depressing kind of movie.
Yeah, so they're not going to go Children of the Corn by having the Indian guides bond to their fathers by killing the gangsters and burying them in a mine. Oh, spoilers.
No, I mean, I did not expect this movie to play out the way it did. I was sort of expecting the trope of the father figure to fight back and do some sort of pranking, per se, with the kid. But it turned weird and somber and depressing, like you said. You know what? I want to know who this Scott person is, because I want to understand why he perpetrated this crime upon us.
You know, like...
He hates us all.
I mean, I think it's also that Jonathan Taylor Thomas was just kind of everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for a while, I was pushing the Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Brad Renfro, Tom and Huck movie.
Oh, wow. That was a thing that happened? Yeah.
It was listed on the Amazon also bots or IMDb list, wherever I saw, with this one and Monkey Trouble and several 90s entirely too smart kids movies.
Yeah, this would fall right in the middle of that precocious kid month we started this season with, because this kid, he's giving Kevin Smith dialogue. Like, it's just, it's rat-a-tat-tat, psychology, Uncle Phil, Geraldo. Like, it's all bullshit. I mean, this kid
is the most unbelievably obnoxious little brat in any of these movies. His peak,
well, I mean,
precocious kids.
Yeah, you definitely wanted to strangle him, but he did act much older than he was, like the little old man, if you will.
Did his mom leave him at home by himself while she went and did courtroom drawings and he watched too much TV?
Hold up. That mom? Farrah Fawcett.
That is Farrah.
Don't you mean lots of hair?
Okay. I'll get to it later, but I did get my ultimate Farrah moment later in the movie. I'll tell you when it is.
Okay. We'll get there.
We'll get there. But yeah, no, I had a Farrah poster.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I may
the
have
the swimsuit one.
I you know, with the hair and the whole, like, you know, cheeky smile. Yeah, I inherited it from my uncle, but you know, I had it.
Oh, I get it. Your aunt said not in the house anymore.
Basically.
Yeah. No. That and like a Lamborghini Testarossa were the posters of the 80s.
Yep.
That's exactly. It's actually. She's pretty good in this movie.
Yeah, she's pretty solid.
They don't
and
give
she's
her much.
Still looking pretty hot.
She is.
Yeah.
They give her nothing to do in this movie.
Yeah, she doesn't really have very many lines. It's mostly Chevy Chase and Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
I mean, again, men trying to be parents is hilarious.
Well, in some movies, yes. But this movie, how about we get a summary?
Well, okay. You want me to do it? You want to do it?
I
could do it.
I would love to hear you summarize the movie.
Here's the thing.
Okay, Jonathan, Chief Joke-em-ups.
Yeah.
Chief Joke-em-ups.
So Jonathan Taylor Thomas is abandoned. The first thing of the movie is him having a childhood in which his father is driving away with his secretary in case he needs to write letters or something.
And casually waving out the window.
I mean, it's a disembodied directorial hand if I've ever seen one. Followed by a montage of them moving from the burbs into like kind of an artist's loft. And as Jonathan Taylor Thomas grows up, his mom tries dating, but they inevitably are all losers. So as he finally, I guess as Chevy Chase enters the scene, he's a public defender. No, prosecutor.
He's a prosecutor for the federal government, I think.
Yes, he's a state attorney, U.S. attorney, excuse me. He is the new guy in town. Unfortunately, Farrah Fawcett actually likes Chevy Chase because Chevy Chase is living out his 70s fantasy.
Don't you mean chief, incredibly handsome man or whatever he calls himself?
Chief Big Dong. I really don't remember what he gives himself. But in an effort to kind of win over the kid, which is what this whole movie is, he does a bunch of things to embarrass himself. Meanwhile, the Mickey Mouse Mafia is behind him, desperately trying to end him. This entire mob is four people. It's a really, really stupid subplot that doesn't need to be here, but I guess conflict. Ultimately, he joins a group suggested by a really nerdy little kid called the Indian Guides, which turns out is a real thing, and I guess hilarity ensues, question mark. That's kind of what I got.
That's a great summary.
Hilarity for a certain value of hilarity.
I mean, it is... It's such a soft after school. Like, this is a movie that came out in theaters for some reason, but it's effectively a Disney Channel original movie.
Yeah.
There's no conflict. There's no budget. There's two named actors. Jonathan Taylor Thomas, but Chevy Chase is the only other person who had a career at this point. It's like George Wendt and Farrah Fawcett. And I love Farrah, but she didn't have a career in 1995.
Nope.
And George Wendt, Cheers was over. Like, I like George Wendt. He's funny. And the other thing that the movie gets 100% wrong is it should be about Jonathan Taylor Thomas learning to be a better kid. But the whole movie is focused on Chevy Chase trying to be a better stepdad when he's actually doing his best. And then Jonathan Taylor Thomas, there's like a switch that flicks and he decides to be a better kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't see much of a problem with Chevy Chase's character, Sturgis, other than maybe the beginning he's a bit patronizing and condescending. Jonathan Taylor Thomas's character, Ben, is an evil, manipulative, spoiled little shit, and I do not like him one bit. Except for the middle part where I actually start to feel sorry for him.
Okay, you called it. I either hated him or I felt sorry for him.
Yeah, like the scene when he thinks that Chevy Chase has abandoned him too and he starts crying. Actually, that was made me very sad.
Yeah, that was the kick in the pants right there.
Yeah, that he's a heartbroken little boy who just happens to be very smart and kind of a dick.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I didn't feel bad because he had done nothing to make Chevy Chase like him. And if you're an asshole to people for a long time and they leave you, it's kind of your fault. Right? Like, he doesn't deserve sympathy. He ruined his mother's relationship, and he literally may have driven Chevy Chase away. It's a kid being an asshole.
Well, and okay, so here's the part that I struggle with this movie. Okay, so the movie sets up. It really begins when Farrah, what was the mother's name?
Sandy.
Sandy. Sandy tried to move Chevy Chase's character into the house.
Right.
And number one, I thought that was bold for the mid-90s, that they were living in sin.
They sure were.
Unmarried. Boyfriend moving into the house.
Well, I mean, but JTT made sure nothing happened.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was like, I'm going to be scarred if you sleep in the same room with my mother. Mm. It was actually sort of a stroke of genius right there.
It was a funny line. It was we're dancing around the fact that this is still a Disney movie and they needed an excuse. But you know, you have a broken home, so it's a Disney movie too. That works.
Well, there's a mom though. The dad is missing.
That's fair.
Okay, so
that's revolutionary for the Eisner era.
That's true. Usually, it's the father who's around and the mother is missing.
Yeah. Anyway, so we enter this world, she's kind of a vague artist. She does courtroom sketches. She's a sketch artist and collects garbage off the beach to make into murals.
Yeah. She at one point she has a art show where she's displaying some art or something. So she's portrayed as this bohemian Seattle, Washington, liberal artsy mom.
Well, they show that she has a day job being the court artist, probably why she can afford to live in what seems to be a significant chunk of an old building.
Okay, this is, I laughed very hard at this, and it wasn't what the movie intended, but they're like, so we bought this loft, and then my mom did a really good job making it a home, and then it's the same empty warehouse, but with a chair and a table.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they have
a garden on the roof for me to play in or something like that.
I just want to see that.
It was sort of a cool roof, though.
It was a cool roof. I just want to see a kid swing off the edge of it, just like trampling down off the height.
She must be getting quite a bit of alimony from her dickhead ex to pay for that.
Yeah, because I don't think courtroom artists make any money.
Exactly.
I think she's as broke as the net. I mean, that's why she desperately needs to lure in Chevy Chase as a successful attorney. Also, he's a successful attorney. Live at his house.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, get this kid out of like the asbestos-filled attic that you're stuffing him into, so you can peddle your art wares made out of garbage you find on the beach. Like, I mean,
Philistine.
This is literally script writing 101. Give her three characteristics. She's Farrah Fawcett. That's one.
That's
two, she's a courtroom artist. Three, she makes garbage art. And then that's it. She doesn't even have any other lines other than you should try harder to be a stepfather to him.
Well, Anne's weird codependent thing with her son where they both kind of look at each other and shake their head when like he's like vetoing her current boyfriend, the clumsy kite guy.
Ah, you missed it. This was a subtle comparison on who had prettier hair that day. And sometimes it's JTT with his spectacular mullet.
Yes, yes.
In the Danger Island podcast, didn't you say every kid actor in that era had like this part in the middle salad bowl thing going?
Well, and the nerdy kid that's shoved into lockers effectively has the kind of salad bowl, like penis head haircut. But he has like the straight hair version of the Seinfeld mullet. It's kind of like a waterfall off the back. It's quite impressive.
It's everything that is the 90s. I want to say this is probably the most 90s movies I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
From the little details such as everything was so oversized. Like the children were swimming in t-shirts. Pants were just hanging off. And I did see a flannel shirt around someone's waist.
Nary worn, but always be sweatered.
Always there.
Yeah.
It was so 90s.
And I mean, the music is spectacularly 90s.
Oh,
This movie filled, like, there's a reason, I'm sure, I don't know if I own this, but I owned one of these movies. They're all the same. and this just feels like it belongs in a VHS collection somewhere. Like, the fact that you can rent it on Amazon off a clearly bad VHS rip makes sense. It should not exist in Blu-ray. There's not going to be a 4K restoration.
All we need is some rich eccentric, and maybe we could get one.
Here's my question. Is this really the type of movie that Disney thought would appeal to children? Because this doesn't seem to have any of the hallmarks of what children can
connect. When I saw this as a kid, I thought it was funny when he starts messing with the water and freezes Chevy Chase in the shower.
That is a Simpsons gag from
there. That is a delightful single moment. There were...
Oh, and the young crab skit. That was funny, too.
The one absolutely charming moment that made me laugh out loud that I wish there was tons more of is basically when Jack is hanging out with, David Shiner, actual clown. Every scene that those two were in, it was hilarious. It was their physical humor. It was beautiful.
Well, and that's the thing that bothers me. He is a sarcastic prick in all of his movies.
Yeah.
But his comedy doesn't come from his... I mean, it's him being quick, but it's his physical comedy.
Yes.
And he doesn't do enough of it in this.
No.
We get a couple of it. I also found it funny when his breaks were cut.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I mean,
then there's a lot of big Chevy Chase expressions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know,
Chevy Chase action driver.
Yeah, why not? Like,
seriously, we're talking some like SUV salam going on here.
Well, Chevy Chase's magic is the everyman being put in extraordinary situations and seeing those reactions in his face and in his body. I mean, that's Chevy Chase. That's what he does.
I mean, I think the magic is that his head seems to keep growing. Because a svelte, thin Chevy Chase did not have a head as big as these melons were in...
Oh, that's a good point.
When he comes on stage, you recognize that voice first and that kind of dimpled chin, but his head is massive. It's magic. I mean, we can traipse through this movie. The one thing we got to talk about is we're effectively introduced to Chevy Chase being threatened by the mob as he puts away one of four mobsters in San Francisco.
One of the four San Francisco. Go mobsters. Yeah. Seattle.
Excuse me. Yes.
Yeah. The infamous Seattle mob.
Yeah, the Starbucks quads. These guys are, it's an old man who doesn't matter. And then his son and two henchmen are the ones who, you know, swear revenge. And, you know, Chevy Chase plays it cool. He's like, look, I'm used to hoodlums threatening me. But about 40 minutes into the movie, they show back up and you're like, oh yeah, those guys. I wonder what they're up to.
Cunningly engineering a car accident without implicating themselves.
Yeah.
And yet they somehow lose all their IQ once they got into the woods.
They wore suits the entire time.
Yeah.
In the woods.
Suits in the woods with a rifle. It was the funniest thing.
It's the Mickey Mouse Mafia. They sound like they're all from Queens the whole time.
In Seattle.
You can't get one cool mafiosi, like, you know, one cool mob guy, because they're like, hey, yo, look at these bees, what's going on? You're just like, guys, come on. I know you want to
get this. Is where the Corleones and the Five family sent all their cousins. This is not personal. They just couldn't survive, so we sent them to Seattle.
We sent them out to the farm, you know. We sent them upstate somewhere where they could roam free among all the other little mobsters who don't know what the hell they're doing. Gave them one prostitute to try to sell to each other. It didn't go great. They killed her.
There were too many of them, so we had to send them to Seattle. And even that wasn't enough.
Oh, my goodness. I had some moments where there were problematic aspects. The whole Indian guides thing
is weird.
Oh, it's weird. It's problematic. The whole rain dance sequence. I was like going, oh, cultural awareness, guys.
They brought in an actual Native American to teach these people.
Clearly that makes it better.
To make these suburban white people straight.
And more importantly, apparently the way you summon a rain dance is to dance to Everyone Dance. Everybody Dance Now. By CNC Music Factory.
CNC Music Factory.
That's so 90s, that song.
I was going to say, this lets you know it's exactly 1995.
Exactly.
Is that peak 90s?
That is peak 90s. Everybody Dance Now? Or Everyone Dance Now?
Everybody Dance Now. It's that temporary, like, early 90s to mid 90s resurgence of kind of disco dance. Like,
yeah.
It's very weird. I mean, I guess this leads us to talking about the Indian guides. Effectively, the Indian guides are Jonathan Taylor Thomas trying to break Chevy Chase. So far, he's played good, but he wants to find the one thing that he thinks Chevy Chase won't do, which is this Indian guide thing. Which is a very weird assumption, because Chevy Chase has been pretty good so far.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, frankly, if this was a better directed movie, there'd be a montage of other things that they tried that Chevy Chase turned out to be kind of good at. You know, you need a montage where they're, like, playing baseball or something, and Chevy Chase is doing it. So this is the exasperated last shot. But
rather than the first idea.
I mean,
at least that keeps the movie relatively short. That's a good thing.
Yes, I'll give you that. It's what, like 92 minutes? It's nothing.
That includes a credit, so you can stop the movie 3 minutes early.
Yeah, right. That's why, to me, I thought this was something that would be on TV. JTT is a Disney star at this point, because ABC is a Disney channel. Home Improvement was their thing. Chevy Chase is the only reason adults would be there. Farrah Fawcett, but she's barely in the movie. And so you kind of just have a TV movie here.
No, it really did come together as a TV movie in my mind.
We're introduced to kind of the lovable losers. The cool character, the too cool for school character, is his black friend who barely gets a credit in this movie. There are four lovable loser kids and their dads and the Indian guides who are attempting, as George Wendt kind of tells us, they're all dads who have a hard time relating to their kids, so this is why they're there. George Wendt is also a stepdad. And the relationship between George Wendt and Chevy Chase is actually kind of the only one that builds over time. It's the only one that has an arc, which is interesting, I think. You know, this is where we get into what the Indian guides are. We have George Wendt, who's the chief. We have Red, who is like obsessive compulsive and kind of an asshole.
Is that Al Bundy? He looks like Al Bundy.
No, it's Art LaFleur, who, yes, he does look like O'Neill. What's his name?
Ed O'Neill.
Ed O'Neill. Bundy. And then you have a physical comedian. What's the clown's name? Richard.
The character's name is Lloyd, but it's actual
David Shiner.
David Shiner.
And then, you know, that's kind of it. There's
I did look him up, and he's an actual clown.
Honest to God.
Yeah, and he wrote Cirque du Soleil, apparently.
No shit.
Yeah. No. This guy's got apparently credits to his name, and I was just like, ugh. But he was a delightful part of this movie. Probably one of the few things I liked about this movie.
I'll agree. I mean, he's funny, and it makes sense that he's doing choreography for something like Cirque du Soleil, because there's just not a lot of mime movies anymore.
Well, even just the scene that he did with Chevy Chase, that was classic Chevy Chase.
Right.
And they're setting up the teepee. I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. More. Oh, it's done.
But I mean, it's a great gag. Like, he's like, look, let's make the kids laugh.
Yeah.
And it's probably improvised. They just do it a couple times to polish it up.
Yeah.
But it's two incompetent men trying to put together a tent. Everyone's laughing. It's funny. It's like a blissful perfect 2 minutes that you could pluck out of this movie and put almost anywhere.
2 minutes.
Right? You put a Chiron in front of it like it's a Monty Python sketch, and then you call it. Chevy Chase used to be really good at this stuff. I don't know who he pissed off in Hollywood, but this is all he should do. I mean, frankly, the other men are nothing. I like Lloyd's character, but he doesn't say anything, so he's out. His son also doesn't really say anything. He's out.
But he's a mime. Isn't that the point?
Well, right. But that means he only does anything when he can be physically funny, right? So they're not really characters. They're punchlines, which is fine. This movie needs humor, but you're not really writing stuff. You're just telling them to go and be funny. You have an OCD guy who always says correction, blah, 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 blah.
Point of order,
because he's a loser, and people who do that should be shot. And then finally, George Wendt, who's a person. And since he's the only person, you know that they're going to have a relationship later, and it turns out that they do.
Indeed. I mean, he's the one that isn't one-dimensional. I think it brings an important point that it seemed like this movie was more targeted for adults, to be honest, than it was a kid, because the story was very adult-centric.
Any adult with any maturity worth a damn would think, you know, no wonder when someone murders kids, it's always mommy's boyfriend. That kid is so freaking irritating.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that was it. Maybe it was a movie made because someone went through a divorce and he, you know, wanted their kid to figure out how to deal with the new stepdad. But even at that, it's kind of a weird movie to...
Yeah, you could make this some sort of drama involving a decent man dating this woman who has this unhealthy codependent relationship with her son, who then he tries to, you know, screw with him.
You know, Matt, I would watch Chevy Chase and The Good Son.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, no, totally. Or something more classically 80s, where the father figure and the son are slapstick joking and pranking one another throughout the movie, and then they find that they can respect and connect as adults, or, you know, people who care about each other at the last minute. That would have been better than this.
It would be. And I'm going to throw one thing at you. In 1993, The Simpsons came out with an episode called The Boy Scouts in the Hood, where Homer, being a bad father, signs up for a raft... Well, Bart essentially goes on a sugar bender, ends up joining a knockoff version of the Boy Scouts called the Junior Campers. Homer, being an absent father, ends up disappointing Bart on a rafting trip, and they end up going camping, at which point they get hopelessly lost. This was an episode that came out in 1993... 2 years before this movie. Yeah, it even started Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, but Fat Tony didn't try to kill them in the process.
Yeah, but it's like someone said, hey, let's use this plot and then throw in Mafia.
I mean, and let's make it 90 minutes. Really? Wait, is he going to go rafting? He's going to go rafting. Oh, no. How do you rip off this episode of The Simpsons?
Well, you have him not go rafting because he got run into the bay by the Seattle
Mafia.
Yeah, whatever you want to call him.
As a side, more people saw this than... More people saw the episode of The Simpsons than Man of the House.
I am shocked to hear that.
Completely shocked.
It's a good episode. It's the one where Flanders says, Godspeed, little doodle, as the cheese doodle is used to fish. Anyway, I'm done. The Mafia returns. They watch him camping out. The first camp out is just kind of in someone's backyard. The other thing they don't
Which
really...
Which they trick him into dressing up in a full Indian outfit.
Which looks like it came from a party city.
It probably did.
Yeah. Okay, so they're being very problematic with this whole Indian guides throughout it. And the camp out in the backyard, Jonathan Taylor Thomas's character puts paint on Chevy Chase's character that is more permanent than it should be.
Yeah.
So when Chevy Chase has to go into the office the next day and represent the U.S. government against an indigenous tribe?
Yeah, the Salish Nation.
Yes. Yeah. Complete irony, because he's like, that's insulting! And I'm just like thinking, this whole movie is insulting.
Well, I mean, it's such a contrivance. Like, it's not even like, it leaves kind of a weird rash on his face. And it
Because the whole plot involving him having allergies.
Right, and like he goes, you know, traditionally, the happy face is not a Native American symbol. And you're just like, this is a movie! Someone needs to edit these things.
Well, he's a lawyer, so of course he'd come up with a way out of it. What's he do? Admit he was wrong?
No. The fact that the Native American guy, whose name is Leonard something, in real life he's Chief Leonard George. He died 2 years ago, something like that. His name is Leonard Red Crow, I think.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, the happy face is not a traditional Native symbol. And you're just like, guys, this is a movie. You don't have to make joke 'em ups here. This is you make it a comedy. This movie wants to walk the line, and it's what bugs me earlier about JTT's dialogue, where he's snip snapping about psychiatry.
Yep.
It's very pop psychiatry about, like, oh, I'm gonna have emotional scars from this, and my mother being intimate is a sign of my own weakness. And they go into Oedipal complexes, and you're like, guys, this is a kid's movie.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, if he's having territory issues about his mother towards a male rival.
Who cares? It's a stupid scene. Let the kid talk like a child. I mean, that's 1995 independent filmmaking affecting Disney, but still, it is so much.
This is what happens, I guess, when you leave your kid at home all day watching, you know, hard copy. This is what results.
To be fair, I think in the 90s it was required viewing. If you weren't watching hard copy, I mean, what were you doing?
Watching Cops.
Yeah.
bad podcaster, what you gonna do?
This week on Unsolved Mysteries, Chevy Chase's hairline.
Unsolved Mysteries, that was cool.
At this point, we can talk about what happens. The mob shows up to see Chevy Chase dressed as a Native American. When they're camping in the backyard, he goes, well, we got to follow this guy. We now know where he's going to be. We get his brakes cut, I think is the next scene, pretty much. Yep. As he's careening down the hill and the brakes are cut, he ends up driving into the bay, and Jonathan Taylor Thomas is left behind on the canoe trip.
And he cries.
And while having flashbacks to his actual father leaving him, that scene is actually really sad.
It is. I mean, otherwise, at this point, he's developing. He rescues he stands up for the kid who keeps getting shoved into his locker, who will eventually sleep at his house. They'll do a sleepover.
And he doesn't seem to understand why this kid would ever want to do something nice for him.
Oh, yeah, because he gave him that fancy vest with the fancy beadwork.
I wouldn't understand why, like, because the kid's been a dick to everyone. Why would anyone be nice to him?
Exactly.
But regardless, they start hanging out. He starts making friends with these good kids and not the black kids. So he's doing better, I guess, the movie tells us. It's weird internal politics.
The vibe I'm getting is that Monroe might have been the Jonathan Taylor Thomas in his own mother's life, because he seems to be have like, this is how you get rid of your mom's boyfriend. And the longer they stay, the harder it gets. So I was like, some sort of, I'm trying to think of the right word here. They both feed off each other.
Yeah. And well, that's the whole point, is that I expected that to happen, where they would come into conflict. But at that moment where Chevy Chase's character Jack realizes that he's being screwed with, the movie got serious and depressing, because then he's like, oh, well, the boy just needs love, and I need to double down on being a loving father figure instead of what I would expect from a movie that is Disney and from this time period, where he engages in return pranks, you know?
Right.
And then it becomes an escalation movie.
Right.
I'm pretty sure the young crab and lots of hair skit was pretty obviously, you know, him getting back at him.
Well, in a loving way. See, even then, every time that Jack shot back, it was all like, I'm trying to be understanding, and yeah, I want to bring this kid into the fold. And it was just like, gosh.
It's hard because it's a kid's movie, right? Because what effectively you want is the Meet the Parents movie, where like every time something happens, it happens back. And they try that. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen any of this other crap, but like, that's kind of what happens in the Robin Williams movie RV. And Are We There Yet, which is Ice-T. And it's, you know, like the kids dick around with him. He tries something but makes it worse. But it's all comedy. This one, it's like such rough gear shifts. I don't know what kind of movie it is at the end of the day. And that's a problem.
Yeah, no, totally. Is it a comedy or is it like a lighthearted family drama?
Because it really does shift into being a Lifetime movie for a good amount of this. Oh. There are funny bits. Matt really hasn't explained what the squatting crab thing is.
They're in the final camp out in the state park, where they're doing like, let's tell each other fake Indian stories. And so Chevy Chase's character basically tells a story of the Native American boy, Young Crab, who was abandoned by his father, who ran off with the secretary. And then handsomest man ever meets his mother, Lots of Hair. I thought that was hilarious.
I have to admit, I chuckled when Lots of Hair.
I mean, it was a guffaw. It was a chuckle, but it's a moment where you see what this movie could have been, and that's why it's frustrating, because Chevy Chase is really effortlessly funny, and JTT doesn't have to be. He can be the straight man. Problem is, in a scene where Chevy Chase is the straight man, JTT is the straight man, you just don't have any comedy.
Yeah. And it seemed like every time they were approaching a moment of like funny, they de-escalated.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, you're killing me.
The failure of this movie comes from the fact that it doesn't want to commit to anything.
Yeah.
I don't think any of these movies are particularly good, but if you want to see how absurd it can be, see Kicking and Screaming with Will Ferrell. Because he plays the stepdad, he becomes the coach of the soccer team, and he just gets way too into the soccer team. And so he starts yelling at kids and wanting to win, and like, then there's actual escalation. The problem is Chevy Chase is actually kind of a good stepdad.
Yeah.
He really tries. He's stupid. When the mob cuts his brakes, he doesn't tell anyone that they're in danger, therefore putting his family in significantly more danger.
But he wants to be a good father.
Who cares? If someone's cutting my brakes and trying to kill me, I let my wife know.
Right.
But regardless, at the end of the day, the mob shows up on this big annual 4th of July camp out, which they established as 4th of July because, you know, everyone has a holiday. Even the mob has a holiday, so they can come kill him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they still wear their suits, their uniform, out in the woods.
Hey, there's bees out here. This is nature. It's wonderful. But, yeah, and like the DA or whoever, the head of his little U.S. attorney law office is like, you got to get out of here. Someone literally cut your brakes. This report from Mako says someone actually cut your brakes. And he's like, no, I can't move until after the 4th of July field trip. I'll really bum out my son. You're like, you'll be dead. He kind of does this like...
He's like, meh, whatevs.
I'm tall. I die slower. Or whatever. Like, yeah. He has this belligerent energy. And I realize, too, I never want to see Chevy Chase in a drama.
Nope.
It's like... Will Ferrell does that kind of weird movie, Stranger Than Fiction, which I very much enjoy, where he plays a straight man who realizes he's a character in someone else's novel, which is neat. This is just like, oh, no, Chevy Chase should never be serious for more than 30 seconds.
Nope.
There's no payoff. There's no nothing. There's nothing behind the eyes. It's very weird. It's like he's seen serious people coming when he's coming down from Coke Highs. He's like, oh, those people are mad. But he doesn't know how to do it himself.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre. But out in the woods, you know, they're setting up tents. There's the comedy scene where they're trying to comically set up the tent to get just a little tickle out of JTT.
Who relapses into being a dick again. Like, he's in his game gear and won't help set up the tent.
Well, that's because he still thinks that Jack basically abandoned him when, in fact, he was a target of the mafia and took a dive into the bay.
This is also why you tell your family, I really did not abandon my new potential stepson. Yeah. I was nearly killed.
But then JTT goes off to fill up the canteens, and he sees, like, three mafia men hanging out by the river.
Talking in very loud voices.
Talking
about what
in
going
very
to do.
Loud voices, brandishing a rifle about how they're going to murder Jack.
And one of them is in a suit still. Up to his waist in the river going, yo, I'm catching fish. If I knew catching fish was this, I'd be catching fish all the time. And you're like, what movie am I watching?
Well, he's catching fish with his hands.
I also want to...
Hillbilly hand fishing, only without hillbillies.
I also want to point out what Matt said. He's playing his Game Gear instead of helping. That places us exactly 1995. If it was 1989 to 1993, it was a Game Boy. If it was 1996 to 1998, it's a Game Boy Color, then a Game Boy Advance. But since it's 1995, it's a Game Gear. And the thing is huge. It's like he's going to surf with it. It's amazing.
Is it a product placement, you think?
No shit. It is so clearly not a Game Boy and so clearly a Sega. Now, maybe it's just me, but I recognize that thing in 2 seconds. It's amazing. I loved it. Although, this is a stay tuned and a half, but it's been a while. Isn't the Game Gear a plot device in the movie Three Ninjas? Where the little fat one, Tum Tum, controls the bad guys using a Game Gear game. The Three Ninjas video game, he literally finds it and plays it because, oh man. And I think Surf Ninjas has Leslie Nielsen as the bad guy.
Are you, oh God, the Ninjas movie. I mean.
That was a phase.
That was a phase that blissfully I was way too old for.
I mean, you know, one time we're going to have to do, like, Karate Kid and then do, another month of bad karate movies. Like, white guy karate is the worst. Bemulleted, these bowl-cut kids.
Oh, my God, no!
Wearing primary colors like they're freaking Ninja Turtles. It's the worst. It's the saddest. It's the saddest thing. Just want someone to punch them in the face. Whatever.
So, anyway, they basically... tip their hand. He goes back and he tells Jack, Chevy Chase, oh, these guys are out to kill you. And so Jack tells everyone, hey, I need you to take the kids. He tells
George Went,
I need you to take these kids. You need to go down and get help from the ranger and get everyone to safety.
Yeah.
Brilliant idea. They're responsible parenting. He's going to go up the mountain and try to draw them away. It's wonderful.
No one listens.
And in fact, the fathers think, hey, I think it's a great idea to go, like, try and help our buddy against these three guys with guns that are mafia people.
It becomes kind of like one of these 80s conservative action films where, like, we don't need the police. We've got it ourselves. Like,
exactly.
It ends up being Rambo for 10 minutes after being Home Alone for 6 minutes.
Exactly.
Like, it's a very weird ending to a movie for kids where you should get an adult, where you should call the police. They're like, no, we've got this on our own. And they're shooting mafiosi with bows and arrows.
Bows and arrows.
They
exactly.
don't seem to have any heads.
They don't.
No. It's like, I mean, guys, responsible parenting? I don't think so.
No, not even close. Not even a little bit. And at the end, I guess they befriend each other. We end up with a wedding.
Yes. And
Now
I waited all movie long for big freaking Farrah hair, and I got it in that last scene. It was big. It was delicious. It took me back to the 80s.
Oh, and it was Seattle, so the wind was a blowing.
Oh, yeah.
She looked gorgeous.
It wasn't feathered.
It was not.
It was big.
It was massive. She looked gorgeous.
Yes, yeah, she did. She did. Really did.
I mean, this is why you hired Farrah Fawcett to appear in a wedding dress. Gosh. No, I mean, she's like 48 years old in that scene. She looks amazing.
She looks great.
I mean, she's almost age appropriate for 90-year-old Chevy Chase. I mean, and it works. And then this is where they play the Enigma song.
Oh, Return to Innocence?
Return Innocence.
I mean, yeah. That's like the most 90s ever right there.
Yeah, I mean, it was that. It was Adi Adi Amos Adi.
Oh, my
and
God.
Enya. Anything by Enya. Like, yeah. that, those are the three, man. They replaced Kenny G at the softest elevator music you can get. So they played the dentist's office. What do you guys think?
Ugh. Okay. So, final thoughts?
Yeah, give me a final thought.
Okay. So, first of all, I have a new nemesis, Scott. I don't know why you perpetrated this crime on us, but you have, and I will never forgive you for it, even though I don't know who you are.
I will find you, and I will kill you with his very particular set of skills.
I won't kill him. I'll just make him watch, like, the worst movies ever, because someone needs to pay for this. I did not see this the first time around. I was aged out of this movie. It was clearly a Disney movie that they didn't know who the audience was. Is it supposed to be like Hallmark style for, you know, people in their 30s and 40s who want a good cry? Or is it kids who want, you know, a fun romp with slapstick humor? They could not decide. I think that the movie was the most 90s things I had seen in a while. Oversized shirts, classic cherry Coke cans, Brute and Power Stick, and all things like 90s. Flannel out the wazoo. You know, it was a mess. It didn't know what it wanted to be. I was really unhappy with it. Probably one of the worst movies I've seen in a very long time.
Fair. Matt?
I didn't really like it that much. Mostly about the first half of the movie, I just hated Jonathan Taylor Thomas's character a lot. Like, you've listened to earlier in the podcast, I straight out cursed the character out. He is such a brat. And then you have the gigantic mood whiplash moment where he has, like, flashbacks to his father leaving him, where you feel sorry for him. It's just real legitimately heartstring pulling. And then we end up with, you know, Home Alone in the woods.
Yeah. I didn't like this. I really didn't. I don't know if it's the worst thing we've done, but it's barely a movie. It's more of like a Mad Lib. Like, okay, we have our two stars. We have a kid star and an adult star. Let's just figure out what is going to happen this time. Okay, so it's a it's like just shaking dice. All right, he's a stepdad, and they need to go camping. It feels so rote. It feels like there's nothing there. It's short. It's nothing. It's weird, but it's such a 90s thing. Like, they must have put out 12 movies like this in a decade. There really must have been every year a Christmas movie, a nothing family movie, an animated movie, and like kind of a late spring filler movie. This was their like family movie of the year. It came out in March. It probably played through the summer. It made pennies a week, but that's what it was, so that there was always a matinee for the kids. There's nothing to this movie. I'm shocked you remembered it, really. Like, Scott, it's not that that you were really grinding it in our face. I'm impressed you remembered this thing, because this is I forgot half of it. If I wasn't looking at IMDb, I would have not remembered a damn bit of it, really. So thanks for calling in. Thanks for tweeting this at me. This one came to Facebook, actually. But we're done. This is the last listener request episode. Thanks for tuning in for it. The last month this season is my month, and we're going to do cartoon movies come to life. We were going to do Inspector Gadget, but someone called it in, so that worked out great for us. However, next week, we're going to do the baffling movie Rocky and Bullwinkle, starring Jason Alexander as Boris. So stay tuned next week and every future week when we put a piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys. Hey.
My OG Defending Childhood is produced by Blue Letter Podcasting and a member of the ESO Network. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Daniel Suttis and Ann Byrne. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Ann Byrne. Thomas Herman is our consultant. Nick Hoffman is our executive producer. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incompetech.com. It is licensed under the Creative Commons Zone. Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.